Finances are a constant, troubling challenge for cultural venues in New Brunswick. And about a quarter of our museums, galleries, libraries, and other cultural venues say their infrastructure is not in great physical condition. And while cultural facilities might seem the stuff of big cities, in New Brunswick, more than half of the province's artists live in small towns or rural areas, where you'll also find exactly half of the government-owned cultural facilities. Those are some of the findings in a report on the impacts and challenges of cultural venues in New Brunswick, commissioned by ArtsLink NB, the Association Acadienne des Artistes Professionnels, and the Owens Art Gallery, and released at the end of 2024. The report's findings echo the experiences of some of Tantramar's own cultural venues. CHMA reached out to two of the region's longstanding institutions to hear about their funding and infrastructure challenges. Over in historic Dorchester, the Westmoreland Historical Society owns and operates two museums and has saved a number of other village buildings, including two which it still owns, the Bell Inn and the Paysant Card Building, where the Dorchester Library now resides. Judy Morrison is vice president and secretary for the Westmoreland Historical Society.
The society, like, it's been a nonprofit and it's charitable. And it's been around since 1960, so it was one of the first community museums that was ever set up. Our most visible part of us is the Keeler House Museum and the St. James Textile Museum. And our mandate is to collect and preserve and display materials and artifacts, but we actively promote heritage through a lot of cultural initiatives, programs, and workshops, and festivals, and our daily programming.
Morrison says that from a day-to-day operating perspective, the museum buildings are in relatively good shape, but there will be a need for more major capital work in the future, and it's uncertain where that funding will be found.
We need to do some structural work on the Keeler House. There was a large $500,000 project done in 2005 on the front wall, and there needs to be some work done on other walls. Well, we will never be able to get that funding from Heritage Branch because they themselves do not get the funding they need. So we will have to go after larger funding sources to be able to deal with that project.
Morrison says that while capital funding has become more elusive, operating funding has been stagnant, even as costs continue to rise.
We get a core funding grant from the government. That core funding grant, I've been here two decades, okay, that core funding grant has not changed a dollar in 20 years. And when the museum first was established in the 60s, they paid for, all the capital projects and the anything that needed to be done. Now, if you need a dollar for anything, you have to apply for it, write the grant applications, and you get 50% of that cost. But your base funding has never changed. So that means you're still paying for heat and light and oil and keeping the doors open, paying for insurance and liability, et cetera, et cetera. But all of that goes up and the funding never changes.
Like the Westmoreland Historical Society, Strutt's Gallery on Lorne Street in Sackville owns its building and covers some of those operating expenses through apartment rental. But Strutt's is newer to the building ownership and maintenance game. The 45-year-old artist-run center purchased its building in 2017 after more than a decade of planning and fundraising. The move has provided some financial stability, but a big challenge lays ahead. A major capital refurbishment is needed on the more than 100-year-old building. Strutt's director Paul Henderson says the planning for the project has been ongoing for years and the vision is in process.
We've done a fair amount of work and we've done a lot of needs assessment and we've worked with a building committee and with a couple different architects now and gotten a lot of feedback from the community and done a fair amount of consultation. So, but it's not like we don't have a perfect floor plan yet or like... we can't, yeah. There's a lot of space and there's a lot of potentials and a large part of what we're trying to do is make the building more accessible, number one. So we have a second floor that's only accessible by an exterior staircase currently. So ideally we'd be able to turn some of that upstairs square footage into programming space, but if we're going to invest in that space to be programmable and accessible to the public, then we want to be able to make it wheelchair accessible as well and add that to the whole building. So that's a huge component of the project. And then, like anything nowadays, if we're going to invest in stuff too, there's the environmental side of things where you're like, how can we make this the most sustainable but also like affordable? So you're kind of weighing those two things.
Henderson says the scope of the project is significant and will require significant federal funding in addition to provincial contributions and a capital campaign.
To do it all at once properly in a comprehensive way, yeah, you'd be over $1 million for sure, if not two. There comes a point, too, where you can kind of switch gears and just work in a more modular approach and try to do, like, piece by piece, which is less than ideal, obviously, and presents a whole other variety of problems. But
besides managing the planning for such a major project while also running a gallery and media arts center, the additional challenge comes from the uncertainty of federal funding availability. But Henderson is hopeful.
Over the last several years, we've been able to like get $5,000 here, $10,000 here, $20,000 for these smaller, like kind of, yeah, I guess more of the research and consultation stuff. So there is momentum. Like the project has moved along since 2021 and before, but and like the more of that we do, the better our bigger application, the better our vision becomes, the more realized that becomes. So. And if the more we can articulate our needs, the more accurate our costing is, the better chance we have of obtaining one of these federal infrastructure grants.
And when it comes down to it, says Henderson, what Stretz brings to the table in the Sackville and New Brunswick arts community is worth the investment.
We have a 40-plus year history of programming in this town, and significantly recognized by our peers. We have very stable core funding from the federal government, from the County Council for the Arts, and from the province. And all that money is peer assessed. So on a national scale, we're very highly regarded. And the impact that we've developed in this town and nationally is well regarded and highly supported, and we have a great track record of not only like kind of being a sound and stable organization, but the impact we have on the artists and arts community nationally is well received. And then I think, like, due to the participation that we see from all age groups in a variety of different communities, the impact we're having on audiences and engagement in the town, I think, is also significant.
Judy Morrison says that Westmoreland Historical Society museums and their built heritage holdings, like the Bell Inn, have helped define and maintain Dorchester's built heritage in the village center. She says the museums are a valuable tourism product, but they also bring together local residents.
You can come and learn how to quilt a quilt and come away with a quilt block. You can sign up for a workshop and learn how to cook at the hearth and learn to make soup and bake in a bake oven like they would have done in the 1800s. You can drop into St. James Textile Museum at any time, and they'll teach you how to spin and weave and understand about how people had to live in their early homes. So there's a lot of different product, you know, things that are happening. And it's probably very evident when you see through the Sandpiper Festival, we usually have a heritage fair, whether it's basket weaving or rug hooking or dyeing material or natural dyeing. All of those things are demonstrated. And the local people come in as well as visitors and tourists come. So it provides a great focus for an economic generator as well as a cultural generator.
Morrison says that the ArtsLink NB report highlights issues in New Brunswick's cultural sector that have been ongoing.
One of the things that hit me was in reading through it. I made a presentation when they were developing the New Brunswick cultural policy in 2012. I think that was published in 2014. And when I read through this report, I thought, that sounds awfully familiar, and I went back and looked at the presentation that we did in 2012, and it's a lot of the same things. And we haven't solved a lot of problems.
Henderson says he hopes the report finds its way to desks in all levels of government.
Anybody who works in the arts, I think there's a lot of useful information there that you can use to support your applications. I think at every level of government, our town councilors, like it's so much of what we're doing and like in every agency, whether it be arts funders or arts orgs, are like trying to, you know, you're always kind of trying to make an argument and like present real data and facts. So this great report has been supported and funded in the province and spearheaded by the Owens and others. So it's there. It presents really concrete data that can be used to make the case for supporting the arts and also the dire need of so many of the institutions in the province. So.
That's director of Strutt's Gallery on Lawrence Street in Sackville, Paul Henderson. And before him, you heard from Judy Morrison, vice president and secretary for the Westmoreland Historical Society, who operate the Keeler House Museum and St. James Textile Museum in Dorchester. The report, Impacts and Challenges of Cultural Venues in New Brunswick, is available at artslinknb.com. This is Erica Butler, reporting for CHMA Sackville and the Local Journalism Initiative.